Now, a panel convened by President Trump after the mass shooting at a Florida high school is apparently not considering the role of guns in school violence. U.S. Education Secretary Betsy DeVos was asked about the commission by Vermont Senator Patrick Leahy during a hearing last week.
Will your commission look at the role of firearms as it relates to gun violence in our schools?
That is not part of the commission's charge, per se.
I see. So you, you're studying gun violence but not considering the role of guns.
We're actually studying school safety and how we can ensure our students are safe at school.
According to the Department of Education's website, the point of the Federal Commission on School Safety, which is led by DeVos, is to come up with recommendations to improve safety, and that includes a discussion on the minimum age for firearms purchases. DeVos said in her testimony that the commission would look into violent video games, movies, and other entertainment, as well as media coverage of mass shootings. It's expected to deliver a set of proposals by the end of the year. Ron Avi Astor has been studying school shootings. He's a professor of school behavioral health at the University of Southern California. He's the author of books including Mapping and Monitoring Bullying and Violence, Building a Safe School Climate, and Welcoming Practices, Creating Schools that Support Students and Families in Transition. He wrote an opinion piece for CNN after the Parkland, Florida shooting titled Seven Ways to Help Prevent School Shootings. Ron, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
First off, what's your reaction to that exchange with Secretary DeVos saying her panel isn't looking into the role of guns in school shootings?
Well, I mean, it's kind of funny that you need me for a reaction because it's so obvious. The reason why this panel is being pulled together in this commission is, because of the Florida shooting, because of the Texas shootings, and because of these shootings for the past 20 years. And to not cover gun violence, I don't know. I think everybody is scratching their head right now.
One part that she didn't talk about there, as I mentioned, the commission is, their charge is to study the age at which people can buy guns. Under federal law, you have to be 21 to buy from a licensed dealer. You can be 18 from a private unlicensed seller. That's handguns, I believe. Does the age, the minimum age of purchase of firearms, is that an important part of the story here?
Yes, I think when you, particularly from the Never Again movement started from the students at Parkland after the shooting, I think that's become one of the major bullet points in terms of trying to reduce the overall numbers of shootings and people who die in the United States due to firearms. But specifically within her domain, within schools, I think what's disingenuous about the stance in her comment to the senator is the fact that we know through the Center for Disease Control, through the California Healthy Kids Survey, and other surveys in other states, that there are guns and lots of other weapons already on campus. That's been collected for decades, and to not have that as part of the strategy is very problematic. In fact, I'll give you an example in California. Over the last 15, 20 years, every year they collect this data and they ask kids in middle schools and high schools, and you have for the whole state, they cover every school, between 20 and 30% of the kids in specific schools across the state and statewide average say that they've actually seen a weapon on school grounds. A lot of them have seen guns on school grounds. To ignore that data and to not actually listen to what the kids are saying is really going against the public health approach. I would say the kids know that they're on school grounds. What can we do to those specific schools to help them? So I think it's shocking, that that's not part of it. I think the whole idea of weapons on school grounds, if you think about students functioning, not just school shootings, but let's just say going to algebra or math class or reading, the idea that they've seen a weapon on school grounds and how are they supposed to function afterwards, that should be part of what the commission talks about as well, too. And then finally, if she is concerned about weapon use, I mean, then many advances, particularly by the University of Virginia, Dewey Cornell's work, and in other states where they've done very thoughtful threat assessment methods. They use students, faculty, and others, and that really involves weapon use. So, again, I could go on and how difficult that statement is, but the data is showing us that just looking at the age 19 really is not fully within her domain. That's more in the domain of different agencies. there's a lot that she could be doing with the Department of Ed to be looking at issues of weapons and how that's affecting students on school grounds.
Talking to Ron Avi Astor from the University of Southern California about school safety, preventing shootings at schools. Ron, you alluded to this a bit, and we mentioned that piece you wrote for CNN after the Parkland shooting. You gave a variety of recommendations, and one of them was trying to keep students, teachers, other staff involved in violence prevention, and the idea that if we can listen to them at the ground level, not to wait for an anonymous call, say, to the FBI to filter through channels and then come back to the school, we can make a big difference. Talk about what you'd like to see.
Well, it really builds on the earlier comment that I just said, is that, you know, there's a canary in the mine. The students know the rumbling before the earthquake. So what we find in all these situations regarding shootings, I might add suicides as well, is that a very large percentage of the peer group on school grounds appears to have knowledge of some sort of a weapon being on school grounds, of threats being made, or even of their friends thinking of suicide and having a method or a weapon. And that's really untapped in terms of knowing how to access that information and that intel in order to save the lives of kids, or to get kids in schools to be thinking that they're actually saving their friends' lives. And what we've done in 145 schools in California is actually try and, rather than harden the schools and bring police officers and dogs and metal detectors and the militaristic kinds of security measures, which are intuitively make common sense to some people, we went the opposite way and softened those schools. In other words, really focused on strengthening those relationships between the teachers and kids, between the students and each other, building trust, and actually framing it that you could save your friend's life with this knowledge, and this is how you could do it. It's not snitching. It's really supporting them. And there you could see not only are the kids doing better academically, not only do they feel more connected to their school, not only does the school climate get better, but when you look at, for example, the issue of carrying a gun on school grounds, over a 8-year period, we saw a 55% reduction in those schools. That wasn't necessarily just targeting weapons at that point. It was about the relationships with knives. We never talk about knives, clubs, or other kinds of weapons. We saw almost a 40% reduction. For that 30% that saw weapons on school grounds, we had a 40% reduction in students seeing and hearing about weapons. And then you wouldn't think, but we had a 44% reduction in gang affiliation participation. And we think that's because the school could also be a place, a safe haven for many of these kids in very difficult situations or situations where there's community crime. And these kinds of ways of softening the school could actually be the best way we know to actually reduce weapon use on school grounds.
Why do you think we're not having a conversation about what you're talking about, this threat assessment, this building community with students and teachers, as opposed to what you're saying, the hardening of the schools, armed whoever, police, armed teachers, one entrance, lots of locks, that kind of thing? Why does that seem more attractive to talk about?
It's a really good question. And the scientists for the last really organizing pre-Sandy Hook and more strongly after Sandy Hook are scratching our heads on why, again, the national media is not listening to the scientific results in terms of what works. Instead, we see that most of the media reporting and policy is coming from the law enforcement perspective, and quite frankly, industry folks who are selling specific security measures and ideas and security guards. The vast majority of research, and there's a mountain of it, showing that the more you harden the schools, the more you bring these kinds of what they used to call zero tolerance measures into schools, even though initially people feel good about that, over the long run, you see massive dropout, non-attendance. You see the school-to-prison pipeline growing. The Texas data is amazing in terms of going in that direction, and kids actually going to prison at earlier ages. So the side effects of that are large, and I think some of us stop and say, is this what we want our society to be? Is this what we want our schools to look like? And I'm not sure why the data, and again, there are thousands, maybe 20,000 studies in the recent years on issues of school climate and bullying, all showing that by softening, by having this integration that I talked about earlier of the academics and the social, emotional, and the climate, it's a win-win situation across the board, including gang and weapon reduction. So we do need to have a louder voice as scientists. We're trying very hard, but I think there's just an intuitive reaction response that, you know, we just need to have guns to fight guns, or we need more police officers. The analogy I like to people that I think is maybe more comprehensible is when you think of your own community, for example, where you want to live with your house. You know, if you had a police officer in every corner and a bunch of tanks in the neighborhood, that doesn't necessarily make feel safer or more comfortable. What we before with the house are people gardening, kids riding their bikes on the streets, neighbors speaking to each other, relationships that are strong. Those are the kinds of places where we enjoy living, where we want to raise our kids.
We're talking with Ron Avi Astor, professor of school behavioral health at the University of Southern California, talking about school safety and efforts to prevent mass shootings. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you want to see this federal commission investigate the role of guns in school shootings, or are guns not the issue? What do you think of our guest's ideas, the research he's talking about? Instead of hardening schools, making them more and more secure physically, building trust, building relationships between teachers and students. He says a lot of research says that's bringing down the number of weapons in schools. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Ron Avi Astor is with us from the University of Southern California. We're looking at school safety. Education Secretary Betsy DeVos told the Senate subcommittee last week that President Trump's School Safety Commission was not investigating the role of guns in school shootings. To your calls we go. Steve is with us in Danbury. Steve, hi.
Hi, Rob. First of all, I think you do a great job, and thanks for all you do. I really agree 100% with what your guest is saying, and it kind of begs the question, what's next? The Department of Health and Human Services releases a statement saying we're going to look at drug addiction, but we're not going to look at the role of opioids in drug addiction. I mean, to me, that's an apt analogy. I think what we really need are to restore school social workers and counselors to our schools. There have been just a lot of cuts over the last 8 years in those ancillary services.
Steve, thanks. I want to bring Ron in on this. Steve saying, definitely talk about guns, he says, but also more social workers in the schools.
Right. Social workers, psychologists, counselors, nurses. We know that those are very helpful, particularly for students that have distress or difficult situations. If they're on school grounds and there are issues, those kinds of professionals are specifically trained to help those teachers and students and principals to work. So absolutely, we see that that makes a big difference.
Thanks for that call. We'll go next to Stan in Franklin. Stan, hi.
Yes, hi. Thank you. I'll be real quick. You know, the parents factored in here. I mean, we're talking about schools, teachers, social workers. I mean, the parents, plural, or parents, singular. That's where these children come from when they start their day, their homes. My goodness, let's have the schools, let's have the communities try to put the energy into reaching out to these homes, parents, but flyers or what have you, to address, you know, to be sure that their homes are an environment that these kids, these children don't have access.
Stan, we're just about out of time. I want to give Ron a chance to weigh in. The role of parents in all of this, Ron.
Absolutely very important. Don't disagree. But what we found in our research around the world is that if the school is set up to be caring and supportive, as I described earlier, that even if the parents are having great difficulties, they may have drug addictions, they may have other kinds of issues, and those kids attend really amazing good schools, they actually do not end up becoming gang members or bullies or have other issues. The school can help compensate quite a bit, more than we ever thought, particularly in those situations. Obviously, we need to get the parents involved, too, but sometimes you can't. And these amazing schools could be transformative for kids' lives. So it's not an either-or. We need to do both, but let's focus on the schools because there we have quite a bit of control.
Briefly, we're just about out of time, Ron. One thing you say is important is when there's been a kid, they've been found with a weapon, maybe they're expelled or in an alternate school, you say we need to keep working with that kid.
Absolutely, and not just send them out or kick them out to alternative schools. Again, the threat assessment method done by Duke, Cornell, and Virginia is amazing. They have data from two states on it already showing that they've been able to prevent, and there's been no shootings, no incidents happening, by just having this more thoughtful, caring, supportive approach that follows the kids, uses social workers, counselors, but also the teachers, the peer group, parents, community, kind of wrap around these kids and treat it as a resource, things that these kids need, then follow them over time. That's a much stronger approach than just kicking them out, not knowing what's happening afterwards, or putting them in an alternative school that's not connected and they just are kicked down the road in that kind of sense.
We'll leave it there for now. Ron, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's Ron Aviaster, professor of school behavioral health at the University of Southern California. He's also the author of the book Mapping and Monitoring Bullying and Violence, Building a Safe School Climate. We talked to him about school safety and President Trump's school safety committee saying they're not looking into the role of guns in school shootings.